there was a little more to life than the deep fried. After all the men who suffered gloves and appetizers to choose from. Yeah, and if she had to die trying, she had one little promise she was gonna keep. Oh yeah, alright, make a cheese baby. She can eat all night. She was a Northwoods girl. She was putting on my feet that night. Wings were 2-for-1 on the balcony. It's fried food that she really needs. Out on Highway 51, takeout food eating on the beach. In one desperate moment there, she looked at some celery. God, I'm so thankful. Pizza is so close. It's got the cheese I need. Oh yeah, alright, make cheese baby. She can eat all night. She was a Northwoods girl.
Alright folks, welcome to the Muskie 360 podcast. That was Jaybird. That was the new hit, I believe, from Tom Rudess and the Pike Shakers. What do you think, my man?
That's the name of the band?
That is, folks, they've got, you can get you a 45 of that at the Muskie Shop Bash this year, I think. I believe the Tom Rudess and the Pike Shakers will be setting up to sell 45s. What do you think?
Yeah, autographed copies. I mean, sure. If it's a 45, if it's a true 45 like the old days, oh man, you can autograph those.
Well, yeah, why not? Tom Rudess and the Pike Shakers. Well, Jaybird, what is going on up there right now? How's the weather? It has been hot, hot, hot everywhere. What is the Northwoods looking like on that front?
Yeah, well, we had some real hot. We had some rain. We got a lot more rain, and now it's supposed to be 80 degrees and nice every day for the next week.
Nice.
So I guess you'd call that stable weather. It might be some storms moving through today, but later. For St. Germain's 4th of July festivities, Saint, by the way.
Germain. Oh, yeah.
Remember that a couple of years ago when the fireworks went off and I said, I'll just walk in the backyard and
glorious,
take it all in.
Glory days.
Now, that was cool.
Yes, it is.
A lot of people thought that was fake.
No, what? When the fire? Yeah, we try not to do the fireworks, and that is as funny as that was, it is awful. Last night was dog howling fest at my home.
So, well, they're shooting off local fire. Yeah, yeah. They're going to have that all week, too.
Oh, yep. I know.
Welcome to the neighborhood.
Welcome to fire. You know, people go, they get their check from the government, I think, and then they go and just spend it all on fireworks. That's what it feels like. Yeah, that's what it feels like. I feel like I'm subsidizing my own terror. what's new? That's just life at this point, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Never-ending fireworks. They will. Some of these people, Jay, it's like they stockpile them, they dole them out, I think, until about Halloween is what it feels like. It's like they're gonna make it count. They're gonna get the
money.
A lot
of people do. They want to make it count. Yeah, they really enjoy it for, you know, like a solid week. It's just like shooting stuff, blowing stuff up.
Let's not make the boom boom all at once. Let's stretch it out. Let's make it count.
Yeah, but no. Geez, Steve. I mean, man, there's a lot of big fish caught this week. A lot.
What's going on? What are you hearing? What are they doing? What are they buying? You know, what are people coming in and buying 12 of, going, ooh, you know, freaking out about?
Yeah, a lot of swim baits. We've been selling a lot of swimming dogs. We've been selling a lot of Poseidons. We've been selling a lot of Livingston stuff.
Well, Herbie let the cat out of the bag on that one. So he he's been smoking on that short Magnus is what he's been doing.
Yeah, right. He got a big hybrid. Yeah, yeah. Talked to him the other day. That's awesome. Yeah, that's been the deal.
He's got an upper Oh, I think it's upper 40s too. Same day. Oh. I don't know if he showed you that. It's just like, come on.
No.
Yeah, he's doing the Magnus. Ah, speaking of, I just flung it across the desk here. He's doing the 8-inch Magnus. That's his routine. Actually, some trolling too with it, which is a whole different ball game. So we'll uncover the secrets of that soon. But no,
sure.
8-inch Magnus. That's what he's been doing. That's everything I'm hearing a swim bait tastic, Jay. Literally, anybody I'm talking to, regardless whether it's Northwoods, pretty much swim bait town. You know, our bucktails played out. Learn more tonight. I don't know.
I don't either.
I know. Have your year to year. I mean, that's the thing. You have certain years. I know from what I'm hearing from some Minnesota Metro guys are fishing on the Metro, that they're already crushing on the 10-inch Poseidon, or 10-inch Poseidon, and then 10-inch Magnus is what I meant to say. They do catch some on that, but the guys that I know personally are throwing the 10-inch Magnus in white, and it's like, okay. And basically, some live scope, some basically running it shallow, taking the weight out, switching it, and doing some deep water stuff. I mean, it is swim bait year thus far. We'll see if it sticks that way, but
I agree.
I'm not hearing any. Have you heard anybody catch fish on glide? I'm sure somebody has. I'm sure, but like, you're not hearing anybody go glide baits. Not hearing that at all. I'm hearing small blades, big, you know, your rubber swim baits, your Magnuses. I'm hearing that. I'm hearing some top water, but it is like swim bait heavy. That, and then, you know, some open water stuff. Your sculpers, they're dropping some stuff on anybody.
Sculpers do really well with swim baits, you know, like Magnuses too.
That's kind of the, well, that's
versatility factor of it.
You drop it on them. That's how you do it with scope. Put it in, throw it. So I could tell you how. It's to each their own. But
But I've been hearing the same thing, like you said. You know, some on top water, some bucktails, of course. You know,
nothing
but
in
mainly
between.
The smaller stuff. But right.
It's odd because there's not really, you know, not really like usually this time of year. It's a lot of glide bait fish and a lot of people transition to blades. But I'm seeing is in the vast majority of what we're seeing and hearing that is very, very true. Other than that, the comings and the goings at the Muskie Shop. Something I was excited about because I'm 4,000 years old. Bucks spoon plugs. Right, here's the deal. You're gonna look at this and you'll go, that's stupid. You get on the website and go, wow.
Or you're gonna say, what is that alien looking thing?
Right. So let me give you the primer here.
Mm-hmm.
So Buck Perry was a physicist from North Carolina who had figured out structure fishing before they had downscan sonar. He pretty much conceptualized everything that has kind of made modern fishing happen. Just by using his old big brain, right? So this dude, basically, and it's kind of neat, the story behind it, but he would only fish spoon plugs. And they made them from just about an inch all the way up to the 4 and 5 inch that are like muskie sized. And he was the first person to put pen to paper and the first person to prove it on the water that bass, he was a bass guy, that bass did not stay shallow all the time. That they went deep. And what he would do is he would take a spoon plug, only spoon plugs, it didn't matter what the bait was, and he would troll for largemouth bass and absolutely destroy them. Right? And everybody's going, there's no way on planet Earth, and this is the 50s into the 60s, you do not fish off of the bank. All the fish are on the bank. Why would anyone ever fish off the bank, right? Oh, you know, you launch your boat and you throw it at the bank. This dude is going out there and smoldering bass with the regular trolling. Now, that translated into basically all of the, it's the Prometheus of your, all of your trolling tactics, all of your structure fishing, everything. But it's kind of neat, and they still make these baits. I have a few, and I have actually caught fish on them in recent memory on the 5-inchers. And it wasn't about what the bait was. It was about proximity. Sound familiar, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he figured out you didn't need a bunch of baits. You needed a bunch of baits that ran at different depths. So he had a bunch of different spoon plugs that ran at different depths. So it is a really interesting thing where his concept still works and the baits still work. But if you want to crawl in, if you're like really itching to make your brain hurt, crawl into Buck Perry stuff. You're not going to find it on YouTube. You can find some books. We've had books. I don't know if we have the book, Jay, still. Do we? Did we get any more books?
Yeah, we did.
Did we get we got more Buck Perry books?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there
the
you go.
The spoon plugging book.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which I don't recall. It's been a minute. And your man, bye-bye, let's make sure. Yeah. If you, in here, it's a great description. If your mind is open, your brain is clear, and you're willing to look beyond the rubbish pile of phishing misinformation. Thank you. Right? So, this book is basically his treatise on what's taking place in the subsurface world, and he's approaching it from bass, right? That's kind of where everything that I kind of changed my world, changed a lot of guys' worlds when they got into that back in the day, and that's where it began. So is it perfect? No. Is it way, way, way a million years ahead of its time that when it was published? Absolutely. It was like heresy. No one believed it, and this guy went around and basically kicked everyone's ass with spoon plugs to prove it. That's literally how they kind of, not kind of, how that's literally how they got it out into the world. There was a couple different guys that they would, send to tournaments. There was one, Jay, that sticks in my mind, and that's why it's so neat that we have the spoon plugs back. There was a guy named Don Dixon who was sent to Palm to Tear in Missouri, which was stocked with muskies at one time. You know, they have a big muskie tournament. This dude's never caught one, but he knows how to run spoon plugs, and he knew to put a leader on, and to prove their point, went there and just crushed everybody, right? Because all of your competition was, at that point, no one was structure fishing. No one was fishing anything other than edges, and these guys are going out with, primitive sonar, no sonar, and flashers, and just thumping people's brains in, trolling. So it's worth a look. I think the fact we got the restock on the baits is cool. I would not, if you're a nerd like me, this is cool. If not, we got fat bastards back in. If you want, if you need to pacify that. But if you're a dork face like I am, check out the book. But they should be sold together, in my opinion. It should be like the book comes with a spoon plug, but I don't run their business. But don't buy the book without a spoon plug, and if you've never done it, don't buy a spoon plug without a book. But give it a look. If you're complete, you have to be, again, warning, you better be a complete nerd herd and really digging into structure fishing, digging and trolling, and it's gonna open up a lot of stuff. And there's a lot of stuff you've heard me say where you go, huh, that is spookily familiar. Wonder where he got that. And a lot of it's come from there. So I'm stoked as you're back in. You did get that. We got the fat bastards in stock. You're going to need those. You're going to need your little bastards. I like saying it. Makes me happy. What else here? The drifter stuff. Those are finally in stock to get thine hands on. Anything else going on?
Hellhounds. Yeah, a ton of hellhounds.
It is currently... Right now, with what's happening at the shop, it is like restock fiesta too, Jay, correct? Saying there's so much coming in.
There is so much stuff that hasn't come in, and there's so much stuff that comes in daily. It's kind of overwhelming at times, but we're trying. So
it's you got to do the thing. So if there's something you've been looking for, that's one thing Jay is talking to me last night, is like, be watching if there's bait that's like, and this happens to all of us, you fish Lake Succotoban and they only want this color or this weird bait or something like that. I would say in the next few weeks, Jay, by about the fourth holiday, maybe just a tick after, pretty much all your major restocks will be back. There'll be stuff missing, but if you're waiting for baits, this is going to be when you want to keep an eye out for that. Anything else going on, Jay? Anything crazy? Other than that, nothing.
Anything else crazy at the Muskie Shop? Not really. Good. Just super busy, and
I can tell.
Like I said, yeah, just 100% go, go, go,
go, go, go. Well, anyway,
it's almost 4th of July. It's crazy, isn't it?
It's messing with my head that it is.
Yeah.
That's a whole other conversation. I did get this email earlier, which where did I put it? Let me see this. No, not that one. Maybe I deleted it. Bear with me, Jay. There's one that I saw in my inbox that I thought was worth a look. So, yeah, here it is. Hey, guys, just wanted to give you both a very big thank you regarding a not very fun topic. My dad got hooked pretty dang bad today by a pike. Wasn't my favorite topic in the moment, but you guys talking about what to do and when this happens, I'm paraphrasing, was very important. You know, his dad was bleeding. He's obviously, it was awesome that they had good tools. He still had to go to the hospital, but having a game plan was super big. Talking about cutting split rings and all this stuff. So I thought it'd be important when I saw the email bop through before we did this, that it would be worth bringing up again, because there's a lot of guys you're getting into your serious time of year. So let's talk about what do we do in the net for a minute. Right? Yeah, it's not fun. So there's a couple things to hit on here. Safe release of fish, right? But we get hooked to said fish. And it's happened to me a bunch of times. It's not if, it's when, guys. And when you go, oh, I'll never have it to me, that's when it will happen. I promise. Jay, what was it, about 3-4 years ago, where it's like back-to-back videos I got hooked, one through the thumb. If you have, yeah,
gruesome.
If you haven't seen that, it's on the Muskie Shop YouTube channel. It's an older video now, but I'm just there, got a client in the boat. I'm reaching down. I have Nipex in my hands to cut it out of the fish. Somehow it whips around a Smitty jerk bait and it goes through my finger, just completely through, out the other side. And okay, fortunately my cutters were right there on hand, but wham, bam, thank you, ma'am. I'm able to get out of that situation with no major damage, just from not panicking and knowing it. And that's the first thing I'll say is this. If you get hooked to a fish, and I hate even saying this, is like when I get on the boat today or whatever, I'm going to hook myself even talking about it. You get hooked to a fish in one of your digits, one of your fingers, right? It's going to hurt. The worst is getting hooked in the arm, in your forearm, right? Danger Will Robinson. But you got to be prepared for this. First and foremost, especially for solo anglers, I'm going to tell you this. Never deal with a fish or land a fish more than an arm's grab from your tools. Period. Right? Do not land a fish in the back of the boat and your tools are in the front. This is just a good practice. Be in control of the fish enough to the point where you know where you're going to land that fish. Doesn't happen every time, but try your best. If you get a fish in the net, we drag him into the net. We're in. We're excited. We've done it. Yada, yada, yada. We've hit the home run, right? Do not go in and start working on that fish until your tools are right beside you. Take a beat. Grab your pliers. Grab your Nipex. Grab whatever you need so you got it right there. That is rule number one. So yesterday, got a really nice fish in the net, Jay. First thing I do, boom, free spool the reel. Okay? This is just walk you through this. We hook said fish, right? It's in the net. Free spool your reel. Lay the rod down. It is now out of the equation. Okay? I have seen, not to me, but I've seen it happen before where there's still like the reel is closed, so that there's tension on the fish. Fish is spinning in the net, dude gets hooked, and now we got a rod, spun up. Everything just goes bad. Free spool your reel, lay it down. On a big fish, grab your scissors and just cut the line immediately. Get it out of the equation. You need to retie your knot anyway. Why not cut it right then and there? And that's not a lot of people do it. It's a practice I kind of carry on with now. As fish is in the net, go ahead, grab some line. Don't cut it right at the leader. Cut off 3-4 feet, whatever, maybe not that much, maybe more, whatever you think is a decent amount that you need to cut off. Cut that off. You got a fresh piece of line to tie to once you get this critter deal with. So get the rod out of the equation. Tools immediately right there at your side. Period. That's it. You know, you don't have to have your jaw spreaders right there per se. I don't go and grab those. But when I'm dealing with the fish, it is my long nose pliers and my Nip X. They are right there in my right there at the ready. That's the biggest thing. So, dude, you know, dude's dad got hooked bad today. And, you know, in his email, he'd said he cut the split rings, which is, you know, something that I always tell everybody. If you get hooked, don't try to cut the hook. Try to cut the split ring first. Unless that hook is protruding out. But what I want to do, let's say I'm hooked to a muskie, right? So I'm a lefty. I usually try to grab them with my left, and then I'm dealing with that. So most people, what's going to happen, you're going to get hooked in your dominant hand. And that's not what a lot of people think about. You go in to mess with a fish, what hand do you go in with, Jay? Your dominant hand. Now your non-dominant hand has to do this, you know, if we're getting one out of the net.
Yeah, good point. Good point.
So that is something to be prepared for. And nobody kind of thinks the head that far, but you need to be able to do this operation with your non-dominant hand, which is, to the point, it's stupid, but sit there for 5 minutes and play with those freaking pliers before you do it. Try to cut a hook so you know what you're doing. Get you an old hook and cut the hook shank or cut some split rings with your non-dominant hand so you got a feel for it, because you're going to need to do this fast and effectively to not hurt yourself. So let's say you were hooked in our dominant hand, fish in the net. Most of the time when this happens, we're kind of spun up and there's net involved too, right? So we've got the hook, hooks are in the net, hooks are in the fish, hooks are in your hand, right? What I'm going to do is I'm going to immediately assess whether this fish can move again, right? If this fish is spun up in the net and he's not going anywhere, he just did himself a giant favor, okay? If that fish is free and everything, you need to do everything in your power to wrap that fish up. If you are hooked to a fish, no one's going to like this. I've said it before and I'm going to say it again. If you are hooked to a fish and that thing is going ballistic, you need to do what you need to do to save yourself first, right? You do not need to have a ligament, a tendon, a tear. You do not want a hook ripping through. You need to take, you know what I'm saying, right? If you got to subdue that thing. It's a fish, right? So make sure, and I've seen guys freak out, and I'm sitting here going, it's not something you will ever, not everyone will have to do that, but in that moment, don't think about anything other than minimizing the damage to yourself, right? Not a popular thing, but that's just is what it is. You have to prioritize your hand above of the welfare of a fish. Okay, so do what you got to do if you're hooked to one and it's going ballistic. Most of the time, the way I've had it happen to me is that fish is kicking around. Now we're in the net. It's not doing much else, right? So at that point, what I'm going to do with my non-dominant hand, I'm grabbing those Nip-X. I am going for the split ring immediately. Whatever hook I'm hooked to, cut the split ring and get it over with. That is the easiest thing to cut. In general, it's way easier to cut than the hook shank. Now we've eliminated the fish from this equation. That's what you've got to do. So detach yourself from the fish. But what most people I've seen try to do is they're trying to cut the hook shank with their non-dominant hand and they can't do it.
Yeah, you cut the split ring and it's a lot easier. There's a lot less effort required, and you're not going to have as much pain too.
Right.
You cut a 4X hook with a that thing's in you, that's going to hurt even more. So that might happen.
Not happening. If you get a 4X hook, you ain't cutting the shank, and it's gonna take a lot more pressure than you. Because if you think about it, Jay, we're hanging over the gunwale of the boat. That's why I'm walking people through this, because we're hung out, we're crouched, we're arms are out in front of us, and now we're down in the freaking net. It's a mess, right? Go that split ring's gonna be your number one thing to cut.
Exactly why the access has to be. Mm-hmm. Just absolutely right in front of you.
Right in front of me.
Yeah, because you have to be prepared for this.
Mm-hmm.
you have to do everything right. Everyone probably does just about everything right. But even when you do everything right, it will still happen to somebody you know, if not yourself.
It will happen.
The more fish you catch.
Yep. And that's the thing, is just have that stuff on hand. Be prepared for it. I mean, the other thing is this. I've seen guys try to do it, and I'll stay out of the grizzly stuff here, but I've seen guys try to pull musky hooks backwards. Do not do that.
Yeah.
Don't do it. I know one dude. Well, heck, you look at the Smitties, Jay. Russ, remember a few years back, he about lost a couple fingers, right? You know, he had a bite that got infected. He was doing what all musky guys do. I'm tough. I'm fine. Moving on. Right. Got pretty dicey with the hand there. I've known a lot of guys that have torn themselves up. I know not one, but two people that can't use certain fingers because they're in there fooling with a fish that's thrashing around instead of just hugging him up. You know what I'm saying? A fish. It's a fish. There'll be other ones. Don't have a finger that doesn't work because of a fish. But just be prepared for it. Yeah, it is the non-fun thing to say. It always makes for a cool story afterwards, but be prepared for that. The other thing, and this is just from guiding experience. Let's say, Jay, you go out and you got, you know, your friend, your girlfriend, or whatever, your girlfriend's boyfriend's in the boat with you. And guess what everybody wants to do when there's a fish in the net? They want to hover over the net. It happens every time. They got their phone out. Here you're behind. You're in the net, and there's somebody behind you. You have to tell people to wait. And that is it. Think about the last time you caught a fish with somebody in the boat with you, and you're in there about to work on this fish, and where are they? Right in your zone. Right?
Getting a better look.
Right. I want everyone out of my way, because the amount of times I just have to snap back, right? Ninja hands, right? And I've had people right there behind me that I didn't kind of know they were behind me, and I try to jerk back in the right my way, and that's where you get in trouble. So make sure everybody just chills out for 5 seconds, right? Just chill out. Get out of my way. Let me get the hooks out. Let me get the bait out of the net. That's, oh man, I'm going down a rabbit hole. But another dangerous thing is this that I see guys do, is they don't get the bait out of the net, and then they go try to grab the fish. That's how a lot of forearms get hooked, right? So here's the bait in the net. But what I'll recommend a lot of times for me, let's say we've got the fish is unhooked and the bait stuck in the net somewhere, just cut the hook and move on. That's the way more conservation-minded thing to do, is just cut it, bam, 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 cut the split ring so the bait itself is free. And then you can rehook it before you need to get going here, right?
Yeah, and get that bait out of the net.
Yeah,
that has to be clear, the danger zone.
Yeah, and then after that, and if something else too, what's that one, Jay? Is it the extractor? What's that long grabber thing there that's supposed to be pretty dang good?
The grab it.
Grab it, yeah. I mean, if you have problems with that, you're a little spooked out, because I've seen people that are a little spooked out by doing it. It's kind of like they love musky fishing, but it's their least favorite thing. Is the in the net part, I don't want to get all chewed up part. Just be aware, you know, just make sure your tools are there. I'll get off that soapbox. Anyway, we will plow through some questiones here, because we're right there in the heart of it. But yeah, make sure you got your stuff, man. That's just, anyway.
And there's not that much you need. You need a good hook cutter. Have a couple long reach pliers. A grab it tool's excellent. Doesn't get any better than that.
Yeah.
And along those pliers, have a jaw spreader. They're $5. You don't need it on every fish, but have it.
Have it.
Geez, what am I forgetting?
You need three things. That's it. And the one thing is this, and not we kind of hit on this every now and again. It's probably been a couple years, or maybe we did last year, but flat out, the Nip X, do not buy anything else. They're from Germany. They do not cut the musky shop any breaks. They ain't giving me free ones. Jay's not getting free ones, right?
Guten Tag.
That company is, you know, this is not some endorsement other than, like, if you're like, listen, What is the one, like, okay, yes. Can you catch a can you catch a swim bait muskie on something other than the Magnus? Absolutely, and I wouldn't tell you otherwise, right? And I'm biased. Like, but I would not say that about bolt cutters. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's like no doubt. There's like, there's nothing else. There is literally nothing else that will do what these do. They are the best when it comes to the Nip-X. So
you're spot on with that.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to get at. Like, you know, I can have my bias, or Jay will have his bias, or like, we have no motivation in telling you the Nip-X, buy them. There's do not look elsewhere, because what you don't want to do is be the guy that, well, I saved myself some money, I got these other ones, and then you pay the price. Just get those dang things. They don't rust. I've got two pairs in my boat, and there's one pair that I have that I think, Jay, it's got to be 20 years old.
It's a lifetime tool.
Yeah, it really is. It's kind of like me and you, Jay. Lifetime tools.
That's exactly how I've been described at work.
Next one up, Tyler. Hi. We're fishing Prestigo. Is it Peshtigo? Sorry. Fishing Peshtigo below High Falls. I'm wondering, can you give me some Wisconsin Muskie River advice? Well, this sounds like a question for Jay.
Peshtigo what? Summer Muskies. That sounds like a small river.
Yeah.
Peshtigo. Yeah. I'm not familiar with that river. It's not a big river.
No. Well, what's river muskies this time of year?
River muskies this time of year, people live for this time of the year when the summer pattern's coming into its own, you know, we're past mm-hmm. post spawn and all that activity. And topwater baits, you know, skinny water muskies. There's a river up by us that is extremely popular for float trips.
Right, right.
You know, where basically you're paddling down there and, you know, 1 to 3 foot stuff, you know, and you're looking for those little pockets and eddies and, you know, undercuts and stuff, and this is surface baits. And,
this is a mm-hmm. tributary of in running around Green Bay, actually. So probably some good stuff. Yeah. That's mm-hmm. not Jay's neck of the woods, but river muskies are river muskies. So, you know, to be honest with you, it's the same rule with everything else. Pocket pools, eddies, right? We want to be looking for slack water areas. We want to be looking for places that muskies can stage that are going to be easier for them. They're not going to sit there in the main current and paddle their little tails off all day long. Think for places that give them a break from the current that become ambush zones as well. So rocks, they're going to be on the downstream side of things, right? So if it's a rock or a tree, anything that's going to break the current that gives them water that they can operate in, that they're not sitting there burning calories, burning mm-hmm. energy, and lying in wait. The one thing that's cool with river fish, they're a little bit more reactionary, right? You take that in conjunction with the fact that river fish see way less pressure, right? And that's something of note. Let's say there's tons of Wisconsin rivers, and there's rivers everywhere that guys can get on muskie on, and then everybody seems to gravitate towards lakes. Well, my thought has always been that not that people are not, you know, inclined to fish for rivers. Rivers generally don't have great maps, and everybody's scared, right? What if this?
Yeah, I'm not sure if I can get my boat down there.
Right.
Yeah.
And so, and I'll be honest with you, when I have fished on new rivers, not the new river, I've fished the new, but when I'm saying like new body of water, a new river mm-hmm. I've never been to, I'm a little puckered most of the time. Not my favorite thing, right? I hate fishing new water most of the time, most like anybody else. And it's not from a standpoint of I don't like exploring. It's I don't like wrecking my stuff, you know, and when you do damage to things, is generally on new water. You go, oh, there's that rock bar I didn't know about. Or, oh, yeah. You know, there's timber here and things of that nature. So, you know, and that's another reason to have a backup crap boat. You know, that's when that's what you take to new water. But that's the cool thing about river fishing is these fish see far less pressure, if any, in comparison to lakes. So that makes it worthwhile. If you're not a river guy, add some of that into your repertoire, because, you know, you go like a 4th of July weekend thing coming up here. Perfect example. Well, you're off, but you don't want to go to the Three Lakes chain, or you don't want to go to Metro Water in Minnesota and be out there with every other goober that has a pontoon boat or a musky rod, right? Because it's going to happen. You know it is. Everybody knows, Jay. What's it going to look like if they're on 4th of July? It's going to look like a freaking zoo, right?
Sure.
Who let the monkeys
out? Everywhere, yeah.
Who let the monkeys out, and why do they have boats? So, with that in mind, go to the rivers. Check that out. It blows my mind every time, and it'll be here very shortly. I'm up with hanging with Jay and neighbor Steve and everything. And we go by the river. You go drive by Big Sane, or you go drive by, you know, some of the common stuff. There's tons of boats. Go by the river. Nobody. Not a soul, you know. And that's always the kind of thing. So add that in your brain. As far as fishing that area, you know, I'm assuming you're going to have far less pressure. And just keep it simple. Look for pocket pools, eddies, anything that gives those fish slower or slack water, they will be there, Jay.
Yeah. Bring your top water, bring some spinner baits, and yeah, bring some baits. Glide baits. Yep.
Good point on the spinner baits, especially, hey, exploring new water, spinner baits are your friend. Less snaggy. Tim, I'm sure you get this question a lot, but coming from a pike background, we tie our leaders directly to the line. Can you tell me what leaders work best in what situations? When does fluorocarbon shine? Okay, so the guy's a piker, right? And somebody recommend that he should switch to solid rings. We'll get there. So leaders, right? Good recap here. We've talked about it before, but we're going to talk about it again. Leaders, leader material, and give everybody a refresher here, right? So, does the leader make a difference? Yes. Hold on. Let's ask him. Steve Herbeck calling yet again while we're doing the podcast. Hold on, Jay. Let me answer.
Okay.
Herbie. You're on the podcast. What's going on?
Hey, Daddy-o.
He just jumped in. Do what?
Getting my girl out. How excited. I'm going to head to Canada on Wednesday morning and... Man, I just can't wait. I really got the fire in me.
Well,
I'm back on my feet, good and strong.
Good.
I'm ready to go get to Canada and kick some ass.
Awesome. Well, you have this innate ability to just call me while we're doing the podcast, regardless of what time of day, which makes it hilarious. So your punishment, Steve Herbeck, is now answering, what is the best kind of leader for musky fishing?
The best kind of leader?
Yes, sir.
Well, you know, I played around for many, many years, you know, with fluoro and mono leaders, fishing deep, clear lakes, believing that it really made a big difference. And at times, I think it did. Other times, I don't think it did. In certain waters, I don't think it did. But there were certain times, particularly post-cold front, high skies, deep, clear lakes, very finicky fish, that I saw it make a difference. Now, you still have the possibility of a cutoff, especially with rubber. My perfect leader these days, right now, is about 17 to 18 inches of 100 to 130 pound fluoro, knotted right to my braid by Improved Albright. And then at the end of that, I use about 6 to 7 inches of straight wire. And that, particularly when I'm using rubber, any tubes, any bulldogs, swim baits, things that they can gulp when they get into their mouth, when they think it's still real. The only time I've ever been cut off using fluoro was with rubber. So that happened once or twice. And at this stage of the game, I got so many years left. I got my goals of what I'm looking for. I don't want to be crying in my beer.
Right.
So,
is your goal to break 45? Is that your goal?
55? I've done that number.
I said 45. I'm screwing with you. It's funny.
That straight wire, besides rubber, that straight wire is also at the end of that fluoro. is also very good for what makes the swim baits work right.
Uh-huh.
Like the magnet. The magnets works way better with a piece of straight wire, only about 4 to 6 inches even, than fluoro straight to it.
Hey, let me shift your gears real quick on two things real quick. Because you said, and you said it quick, you're tying your fluoro directly, you said, to your line with no swivel with an improved Albright?
Yeah.
Now, how are you connecting that fluoro to the wire?
Well, the wire's got either an iron ring at the end or a swivel.
Gotcha.
Now, you know, the only time I've seen a swivel make any difference is when I got a tangle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I always cock the eyes on my bucktails a little bit. They never spin.
Right.
You know,
right.
So I'm not too worried about that. But I do like either an iron ring or a swivel just for that swinging, connection. You know what I'm saying?
And since we got you here, I was bragging it up earlier and Jay was talking about how hot swim baits were. And I kind of gave up the secret that you're running these short Magnuses. What's going on with that? Kind of fill people in on what you're doing there and what's going on with your swim baits.
Well, I'll tell you that Magnus tail, paddle tail, is different than any of the other tails out there, and I'm not saying it's better. I'm saying it's different. I'm saying at times it's probably better, but you know, swimming dog has its time. You know, particularly under very tough conditions, it's that subtle wiggle to it. That Poseidon is a more aggressive, particularly it's very good at trolling bait or burning. The Magnus is different yet besides. That spin, that tail, is a very aggressive tail, and it's got a thin connection between the body and the tail. So that tail damn near revolves around 360 degrees. It's really, especially when you're burning it, you know?
Yeah.
And it's got a pretty aggressive thumb to it. We caught a couple fish after dark with it already, and a few times we've thrown it. I like the long tail, but in northern Wisconsin, I really like that short tail profile. It still stands pretty high. Still's got a pretty good profile, and I prefer that short tail with no weight in it, because the head has a lot of weight and the rubber has a lot of weight to begin with, and it just seems to rock and roll that short body, you know, a lot better. A lot of your, you know, Cisco's and your northern lakes are on the smaller side for when I'm throwing white or that silver chaotic, whatever you call it. And then most of all, the lakes of fish got a lot of perch and bluegills and stuff like that in northern Wisconsin. Now, when I get to Canada, I'm probably going to be leaning towards throwing, you know, the bigger tail 90% of the time.
Right.
Unless it's a real tough bite, then I'm smaller profile. But, it's, you know, I'm just really getting the feel of the bait. I caught a big tiger pushing 30 pounds with it. Caught another tiger, you know, that was, you know, 44, 43, still a really nice tiger. And then we caught a couple fish after dark with it.
Couple big, I was telling Jay, you caught a couple monsters after dark. So,
yeah. So, I mean, it's been fun playing with it. I, like I said, I've only had a few days with it because I was sick in the hospital for a week and a half and just got back on the water last week, you know, so I didn't get a lot of time to play with it, but I'm liking what I'm seeing. One thing I do is switch the hooks out to a two sizes smaller on the small tail. Mm-hmm. Otherwise they just tangle too easy on the throw.
Yeah. Absolutely.
But I don't see them gulping that bait like they do some of the other, like the swimming dog. They don't gulp it like they do with bulldogs or tubes and stuff either, because it's got that hard head. Same way with the Kraken.
Yeah.
The Kraken, I have very, very little problems with deep hooking like I do with tubes and other rubber baits because they feel that hard when they hit it,
mm-hmm.
and they want to get rid of it before they want to gulp it. Whereas like a tube, it crushes in their mouth, and they just keep instantly want to gulp it right down.
Yeah.
And that's why they want to gulp it right down head first, and that's why you get them deep hooks with rubber baits. I think it's real.
Yeah, it helps so much to have the hard head for hookup, and then
yeah.
I mean, I
well, you, and just being able to switch in tails and stuff. Like I could go to that hot orange perch tail. That what's that one color? That's
Wasteland.
All hot? Wasteland. I can put a Wasteland tail on a perch head. I can put a little subtle regular perch tail on the perch bait. You know. I can move around, you know,
mm-hmm.
I can change some things around, you know, easily, you know, on and off, you know, so, there's versatility to the bait too, particularly with the new heavier weights coming out.
Yeah.
With the new heavier weights coming out and, you know, the weights that in it is 1 ounce and it's heavy enough as a swim bait in most instances, at least for this time of the year. Without a weight in it.
No, we're going to have 2 ounces.
Unless you're trolling it, unless you're going to be trolling it, or unless you're really burning it.
Yeah.
And I haven't seen where burning it has been the key with swim baits this year.
That's one thing, Herbeck, I hadn't even mentioned that yet, but yeah, we've got, so that next insert, so there's a weight coming that'll work for your Kraken and your Magnus that is it's like a 2 ounce weight.
Yeah.
So it's gonna, I mean, and I'm really, we don't, I don't, I hope nobody needs that until fall or winter, but that's really going to be the key there where it's like, take
well,
the
weight. I think that might be real key with the trollers. Like,
oh yeah.
I talked to Jason Quintanto out on St. Clair the other day and he was excited to try the Magnus, especially when I told him as it is, it'll push 4.5, 5 trolling. And I said, there's a heavier weight coming. And, you know, because he likes to get up 5, 5.5 sometimes with mass. And for some reason, out in St. Clair, the last year and a half, swim baits have started to really, really catch on out there versus, you know, where it was all Medusas and mm-hmm. Bulldogs and big ones. And I think it's just a natural progression of conditioning.
Yeah.
You know, so they've only seen a billion of them big Medusas and Bulldogs. And I think you get a little tougher bite going on, like the weather patterns we have coming out of early spring this year. And I think it just leads towards, you know, swim baits. One thing that I found is when swim baits have been very, very effective for me, is when I've had a very hot bucktail bite, a moving, grooving, you know, the fun running and gunning, pitching, burning bucktails, running gun to the next spot, and the fish are bite. And then all of a sudden, the cold front comes in or something, shuts it down. You know, you're hardly seeing, you know, as many fish. They're you got to catch them on the figure eight rather than out. They don't want it real fast. They got to have it slow. That's when you pull out the swim bait, and the swim bait will kick ass for some reason.
Yeah, it just pulls them. It pulls them up. It's exactly the compliment. Like the second the blade bite dies, put on a swim bait. And Jay and I were talking before you called, and you know about all I'm hearing about of guys that are really catching really good fish is swim baits. One thing I wanted to point out, because it's especially with you on the phone, Herbig, and I'm sitting here, I've got, you know, my wall of rubber right here in front of me. It's like, okay. And you look at a swimming dog's tail, and I wanted to point this out to people. It's the angle of the tail of these baits that really matters. And so like a swimming dog, the tail is angled back. It's not intended to be this very hard thumping thing, right? Because
they got a real thin body,
yeah,
and so that thin body rocks some, even with that subtle tail. But like that subtle tail swims on the way down,
right?
And so the Magnus does too, particularly on the bigger tail because it's thin where it meets the tail,
yeah.
Now, the Poseidon isn't really good on the drop, but yet the Poseidon is very good at high speed compared to swim and duck. So all swim and duck baits have their place. They have their time, and you just got to recognize when and what the fish are telling you, what the moves are, which swim bait to pick. Mm-hmm. There's no one that's good all the time.
No, that's the thing, is that and just to, again, the way he's putting it, which is the swimming dog's a little bit more subtle, and the Poseidon, I think, is more of a hammer, right? Yeah. Because, and if you look at the, you'll see guys going, well, I can't get it. I've not had, and I don't think it was their intent, but if, I mean, I've got, here's a 12-inch Poseidon, like I'm grabbing it right now. It's a stiffer rubber. You're not going to be able to get that thing going at slow speed.
What I do with my Poseidons on really hot days, mm-hmm. if I'm going to use it, I lay it out. You know, when those hot days when you go to grab something in your boat and you about burn your hand?
You're out there you're sauteing it up, getting it ready, limber.
I lay it out and I let the sun get on it, mm-hmm. and then I take it and grab it by the tail and stretch the shit out of
just
it.
Just give it a good rub down.
I stretch it about 50 times, mm-hmm. and it will loosen them up a little bit.
give it the old folks, if you want to get
a limber.
Making a limber. He will also rub you down if you're a client on the boat too. Just lay there on the hot deck, warm up, and Steve will rub you down to your good limber.
Well, I usually like it the other way. I like
the rub down. That's God. Okay, we'll stop moving forward. I got jokes that I can't say. Anyway, well, Herbie, I'll call you back here in a second once we get this thing done. I'll give you a holler. We'll wrap her up. But thanks for the intel. And I'll give you a shout here in a few. Okay.
All right, buddy. Thanks.
All right. Be good. Jaybird.
Yeah,
it's freaking. He's just dialed in on what time we're doing this thing. It's funny.
He's a plethora of great information, and man, is he psyched to get up there, huh? That's great to hear.
He has. He kind of, you know, Herbie's a good dude. He went through the ringer a little bit here recently, and he's going to go up there and show you what it's all about. Anyway, Kenny B, thanks for the advice on looking at the land to better understand structure. I was definitely struggling, but I fish a lake that has a bunch of creeks, channels, and after looking at ditches and creeks in my area, it makes a lot more sense. My question is, do you have any way to help gauge distance in a similar manner, say, where I'm standing in the boat and then casting? Okay, cool. So, if you missed that, we were saying look at the land's topography to kind of understand what's happening subsurface, right? So here's a bar or a point, blah, 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 blah. You'll get a feel for it. But he's asking about distance. So the easiest way that I do this and kind of train my brain is the size of my boat, right? So my boat is 21. And if I'm in 18 feet of water, guess what? I could stand my boat on end, Jay. That's how deep it is. It's not that far. And guys will get this in their head. Like, oh, we're in 25 feet of water. Well, the boat's 21 or it's 18 or it's 16. That's a very good reference because you know how long the boat is. Right? And you get a feel for things, whether that be vertical however you're kind of getting this concept in your head that, okay.
Yeah, if you need a perspective, that's an easy, quick way to do it. Yeah.
Right, without again, panoptics, you could do it with live imaging and you go, well, that's 25 feet away. But that's not always the case, not always available. And before that crap existed, we had to figure this stuff out. So use your boat as a gauge, if that makes sense. So, you know, you're looking at something on your graph and you're trying to find distance from it is a little bit different, say on downscan, and you're looking at the map, which there's scaling issues there, right? But you can kind of start putting that together. Okay, there's a 10-foot break or this break, and just use your boat as scale, if you will. Things I've done in the past is gone crazy on certain areas or key structures, you know, and just done a litany of waypoints to kind of understand where I was at with things, right? Which is like literally go and drop a waypoint and then kind of like, okay, well, I go one boat length from here and there's 20 feet. You can kind of grid things out. That was kind of the old school way of doing it with waypoints, and you knew the distance between the waypoints when you dropped. You have a little bit better idea, but you know, you need to use your boat as a reference point. I think is going to be your most rock solid ways to do it. The other thing that I've done is this, is line counter reels, right? Well, how far is it to that shoreline from this stump? 83 feet, because that's how far I cast and hit the shoreline. That's helpful, right? So you just grab your trolling reel and throw a casting bait on it, and you go, okay, that is a 60-foot cast from there to there, or that break line is X, Y, and Z off of this. So that's handy to kind of have laying around. Even if you're not trolling, I will keep those around. You know, I'm always ready to troll, but I've used that in the past to really understand distance. One thing I'm not great at, I'm really not good at judging distance. Like, how many miles is that? I do not know, right? So I've had to rely on tools like that, like the reels and things of that nature, to really understand how far out things are. Mandy, I'm a single mom, and my son is a huge podcast listener. He isn't into sports, so on Sundays when other kids are doing Little League and sports, I take him fishing, and we listen to the podcast. Well, that is the coolest email we've gotten all day. Very cool. What I need help with is getting over my fear of handling these fish. I don't want my son to be disappointed. You could say I'm petite, and I'm terrified he's going to hook a big fish, and I'm going to have to help him deal with it. How can I prepare for when his dreams become a reality and become my nightmare? Well, I got to commend you. Big claps here. Single mom taking their son muskie fishing.
That's awesome.
That is awesome. You've got a lot of balls. That's good stuff. You know what I'm saying? That's tough. No other way to put that. I'm sure I could have said that better real quick, but off the cuff, that's what I said. But, you know, here it is. She doesn't want to handle these things, and she's doing the thing for her kid. So that is superbly commendable. So how do we get over the fear of handling these things? Heck, we probably scared the living crap out of her earlier, Jay.
Well, it was a start.
The timing sucks on this one. I'm sitting here going, here's super mom taking her kid out, and we're sitting there going, you will get ravaged by one. Prepare to bleed.
Know the nearest hospital direction.
Exactly. Never musky fish more than 3 minutes from an ER. Okay. Everything we said at the beginning of the podcast, forget it. It'll never happen. No. All that plays, but in your case, the more skittish you are, the more likely it is to happen. So how, and she asked the thing, how do you get over this fear? First and foremost, I would recommend getting with a guide in your area. She doesn't say where they're at, but find a guide in your area, right? And kind of tell them, hey, my goal is A, for us to catch a fish, but more importantly, is a good on the boat handling lesson in how to not get hurt, right?
Yeah.
That would be the smartest thing to do. Talk to your guide ahead of time and say, listen, my goal is this. Because not every guide trip has to be about catching a fish, right? It could be about learning how to troll, learning how to do this. You know, yes, we want to catch a fish, but there could be a overarch or something you're more focused on, and you will find a guide that will at least, hopefully, you know, in your area that can competently teach you that. You know, there's stuff on the Muskie 360 app about safe handling and all that fun stuff, but as far as the actual act of handling, you're gonna have to get your hands dirty. There's no other way to do it, right? So, I mean, I'm sitting here. One thing I can tell you, my left hand looks like I've cheese grated it, Jay. I've been dialed in, so I've got the musky knuckles from hell, right? So from
battle scars.
Yeah. Well, it's just gill rakers. I mean, from the top, from my knuckles all the way to the end of my fingers are just like raked up, right? So that is going to happen when you're handling fish. I would recommend that Mandy gets her hands on a pair of really good release gloves.
Yeah.
There's tons at the Muskie shop. Get gloves that fit, period, right? Don't get, you know, don't wear a pair of loosey-goosey gloves. You know, make sure there's a lot of stuff on the website or the manufacturer site where they'll say how to measure your hand. Do that so you have a nice, well-fit glove, right? So you're not fooling with it. So have a release glove, and then you got to realize with these fish, their business end is their mouth, right? That's the business end. Everything else, nothing else can really hurt you. So we want to make sure that we have the gloves. There's a lot of cut-proof gloves where that won't be an issue. The other thing I would say is this, is, you know, make sure that we're not trying to stand up with the fish. You can just kind of pull it up and do it, hold it up, blah, 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 blah. Something I've done a lot as of late with smaller fish is what I call the trout hold, right? Where you hold the tail and you support it up under its head. We're not even putting our hand in its gills because they're smaller fish, you know, 35, 36, whatever. Just hold them up like a trout and then send them on their merry way. Who cares, right?
Sure.
And I'm sure to her son, that's going to be a gargantuan fish. Now, there's a thing, and I dealt with it yesterday. We had a big one. Like a big, and I was trying to explain this to the person in my boat. Feel for the twitch, right? The muskies do this thing, and when you've handled enough of them, you realize it. When they are about to kick and do something, they kind of tighten up. It's like, bang! You'll feel that fish, and it's so hard to explain. Guys are nodding their heads and they're in their cars going, I know what you mean. When you feel it, you'll know it. That you can feel the body of the fish kind of like tense, and then he's going to thrash. He's going to do the head kicky. What I always recommend is this, when you're pulling, oh God, it's like the freaking pulling fish out of net show here. When you're doing this, I want to keep my wrist tight but loose, right? And the things that muskies have really got me when I'm pulling them out is if you're like, your wrist is really stiff, he can kind of jar it. So keep your wrist moderately limber, but like a good grip. And you can actually grip things really hard and keep your wrist loose, right? So you're not trying to stiffen your wrist, just like really good grip, loose wrist, right? That will help you quite a bit. I would recommend Mandy, again, commend the heck out of you. You know, if you're in the area of the Muskie shop, hopefully, you know, surely somebody there, I mean, they can get you squared away. But if you can't, get with a guide and explain the scenario to them. And they, I'm sure they'll be more than glad to show you on the water. Another good way to kind of get this under your hands is like mounts, right? There's a lot of old mounts or people have done it. I've seen videos of people done it. I've done it like where you take a mount and you show how to handle a fish and stuff like that. That's kind of a biology lesson where you kind of look at where you want to place it, right? And just kind of delve into that. But don't be afraid of them. They're not going to cut your hand off. They're not going to bite your hand off. If you got the cut gloves, you're definitely minimizing that. And again, I commend you on that one. One more, Jay. One more.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Cliff, I'm sick of throwing blades. I've been musky fishing for just about a decade now, and I am just straight bored with them. What are some other staple baits to throw? It's, you know, during this time of year, Herbeck just answered your question. It's turned into a swim bait thing right there again.
Mm-hmm.
So you can throw your magnets. But, you know, he's just bored with them. Been there, done that. You go, the blades spin, and they keep spinning, and then we throw it again, and we watch the spin. Jay, you're a crankbait guy. You know, Jay is definitely like, okay, all about some crankbaits. And there's dudes like that, Joe Cooper up in Canada. He's a crankbait guy. I mean, if you need something to pacify your ADD, like your fatty slammer minnows and your grandma's casting, things of that nature, your Magnus, just replace bucktails with crankbaits is a really good thing to do. You know, you'll run into some running depth stuff. Something
you'll be more interested throwing that too. You can lose not just lose interest throwing bucktails because of course they're effective. You know, under certain conditions, they're extremely effective.
But
they can be a little bit
neophyte.
There's other baits that require more
engagement.
Right. So your mind and your body are performing something in a more constant state. Yeah. It keeps you more in tune, perhaps, on a long day where you start to lose interest and fatigue starts to set in. That you don't want that to happen, obviously. Crankbait fishing, you're constantly making contact with stuff if you're around, you know, certain cover like weeds, or you know, you're working timber, you know, bouncing rocks, and you know, you got to be more in tune with laying off the bait and letting it back up and doing its thing and all that, rather than just buzzing something and turning the handle over it.
That's where I'm at. It's just like, you know, try not to force it, but I get it, where it's like, oh my God, bucktails, right? That's fine. They have their, like Jay said, they have their time and place, but I like cranks just in instead of doing the bucktail thing. Something I've actually been throwing, actually, you know what, I forgot, he texted me, GB baits, right?
Yeah.
The GB bait jawbreaker. Throwing that over shallow weeds, that's way more fun than throwing a bucktail. Right, you're going, it's the same thing, we got the thumpity thump and we can do a lot more with it, or like your smoker shads, right? So mm-hmm. I'll go for, okay, I'm over shallow weeds and I need something straight retrieve, I'll go with a shallow Magnus, I'll go with a smoker shad, I'll go with the GB bait, right? Let everybody else throw bucktails, or we're doing a weed edge and they're still throwing blades, I'll go with the shallow invader. You know, you've got a lot of variety there if you have ADD and you need to engage. From a guiding standpoint, for me, it's like, okay, bucktails go straight. They don't stop and we can't do anything with them. I like the engagement, being able to kind of attempt to trigger a strike on an edge or pick pockets and do all this different stuff. So for me, cranks are kind of my bread and butter. You know, again, don't forgo a bite because they're on bucktails, and if your cranks aren't working, you know, throw it. But I get it when you're just like beating it and I've thrown, you know, I would hate to know how many casts, Jay, I've made with double eights. Insanity, right? And that's when I kind of hit the wall with it. I'm going, bleh. Unfortunately, now, like I said, it's finally happening where we've gone through, Jay, if you don't notice, we've gone through every iteration of blade combo now, right? And now you're finally seeing, oh, well, the swim baits are hot. Well, wonder why. We've run out of combos to keep beating them over the head with, and now we got to do something different. But bucktails are always going to have their place. But yeah, mix it up. Try that. Try the, like I said, the jawbreaker or the smoker shad. I love that for shallow applications. Dude that makes the jawbreaker, they got like a 54 over, I think it was Toronto, like east of Toronto. I don't know. He texted me, but it was a freaking monster fish. But anyway, Jay, say good afternoon. I got to do some.
It things. Is the afternoon.
It is. Yep. And that's why Herbie's
gone.
All right, guys. We'll catch you later. Jay Bird, say something again.
Next time. Bye bye.
That's a threat.
A little more to life than the deep fried. After all the men he suffered, gloves and appetizers to choose from. Yeah, and if she had to die trying, she had one little promise she was gonna keep. Oh yeah, alright, make a cheese baby. She can eat all night. She was
that night. Wings for two for one on the balcony. It's fried food that she really needs. Out on Highway 51, takeout food eating on the beach. In one desperate moment there, she looked at some celery. God, I'm so thankful. Pizza is so close.